Good morning. Call the Judiciary Committee of the State Senate to order. Today's Thursday, February the 3rd, 2005. It's now 8:40 a.m. We have present this morning Senator French, Senator Terrio, Senator Huggins, myself, Senator Seekins. Senator Guess is excused. We hope she's either delivered or imminently delivering. And we have two matters before us today. We're going to first do an overview of the therapeutic courts, and then we'll take a look at Senate Bill 65. So who do we have this morning to begin the presentation on the therapeutic courts? Welcome this morning, and if you'll both put yourself on the record for the clerk, we'd appreciate it.
All right. Mr. Chairman and members of the Senate Judiciary Committee, good morning. Thank you for inviting us to speak with you today. For the record, I am Janet McCabe, Chair of Partners for Progress. We are an Alaska nonprofit corporation. With me are Judge Wanamaker and Robin Johnson. Judge Wanamaker retired from the court system just 2 days ago, and he is now, I guess it's three now, isn't it?
This is the third day.
Okay. And he is now director of the Alaska Center for Therapeutic Justice, and that's an arm of Partners for Progress. Robin Johnson is the Therapeutic Courts Program Coordinator for the Alaska Court System. Together, the three of us have 14 years of experience with therapeutic courts. Now, we designed this to correspond to what you have in front of you. And page two are the purposes of our presentation in your packet. And we have three main purposes. First, we want to leave you with a full understanding of why and how therapeutic courts are effective. Second, we want you to appreciate that for strongly addicted repeat offenders, therapeutic courts are the smart and realistic way to protect the public. And third, we want to give you a recommendation about how the administration and the legislature could strengthen Alaska's therapeutic courts. We will also talk with the administration during this visit, and we ask, we'll be asking that our proposed recommendation be included as part of a comprehensive strategy to address the problem of alcoholism and addiction. We think it's important that the administration be strongly involved, just as the court system has to date, and the legislature. My part of this presentation is to give you some background about how we came to be where we are with therapeutic courts. And page three is the illustration here. It's a map showing therapeutic courts throughout the nation. As you know, the 1980s were a time when the courts started to get tough on addictive crime, and mandatory penalties came into being in the 1980s. Increased penalties were highly effective for reducing crime among social drinkers. However, attorneys and judges at that time started to see that strongly addicted offenders were just not reached, that they were a largely intractable group that were not influenced by increased penalties. Some judges started to look for a better way. In 1989, the first therapeutic court started in Dade County, Florida. And page four shows the growth of therapeutic courts nationally. You can see from these numbers increased exponentially from 1989. And the very latest information I got a week or so ago from the National Institute of Drug Courts, National Drug Court Institute, is that currently there are 1,621 therapeutic courts operating nationally. It really is a big and very rapidly growing movement within the judicial system and among attorneys. Okay, page four. Most of this growth has come from the ground up. Therapeutic courts were started just as the wellness court was started in Anchorage. You know, when a judge like Judge Wanamaker saw that something was not working and looked for a better way. And the judges and attorneys involved have learned from others, they've adapted the model to fit the local situation, and they've made improvements as they've gone along. Well, I think in Anchorage we now have a really perfected, very workable model. So to describe the reason why judges and prosecutors have been willing to drop the traditional approach and try another way, I want to give you the exact words from John McConaughey, who was the prosecutor. He is the prosecutor for the municipality of Anchorage. He has experience in Bethel and many years in Anchorage also, prosecuting under a variety of administrations. And with his permission, this is a direct quote on his observation about the therapeutic court method. He said, the need for these courts is obvious. There is a certain population out there that clearly does not respond to the traditional model of the criminal justice system, that does not reform their behavior in response to punishment. These are people you would be unable to reach with anything like the traditional justice model. And here, if you'd refer to page 5, you'll see just what he's talking about. Offenders with 31, 22, 33 prior convictions, or offenders with multiple DUIs, the 6th, the 7th, the 8th DUI, do not respond to the increasing punishment that they get. Most of these offenders have intractable alcohol problems, blood alcohol content of 0.33, 0.38, 0.21, for example. They are not going to respond to the simple imposition of a harsher sentence. In the traditional system, rehabilitation programs are done after sentencing, and often this happens with, you know, as much as a month after the sentence. But at that time, 50% never even show up for treatment. And those that do generally do not complete the program. So that's just what he said directly. And underlying Mr. McConaughey's statement is an admirable recognition that protecting the public is primary. And for that, he has been willing to try a different way. Serious repeat alcoholics always come out of jail after serving their sentence. And once they get out, they are an extreme danger to the public. A car in their hands is a deadly instrument, and simple incarceration gives the public only a brief window of protection. And I'd like to comment that MAD is very supportive of the therapeutic court program for this particular group of people, of offenders. And now I would like to turn you over to Judge Wanamaker for an explanation of why and how the therapeutic court method works. And we have some recommendations for strengthening the system of therapeutic courts in with both the administration and the legislature. I guess beforehand I wanted to say that we immensely appreciate the support that the legislature has given us. It's made a big difference in making the courts work.
Thank you, Janet. Welcome, Judge Wanamaker.
Thank you.
You can put yourself on the record, sir. We're eager to hear your testimony this morning.
I'm Jim Wanamaker, retired district court judge, and I measure my retirement time with my watch and my calendar, 2.5 days now. And I had experience to be on the development of the misdemeanor level wellness court in Anchorage, which is directed at the DUI offender. And it's a population where there's really a great benefit in doing something different than ordinary jail time. And in all of the, there's two at the last minute, we made a decision to renumber the representatives, or the senators have page 6 numbered, and the rest of you, it looks like this, the day in the life of wellness court, with a chart that looks like this. And if you look down there, this is just a cross-section of one day in the wellness court. And if you look down there, you'll see that, in the age column, they're all, again, copy, I think as well, they're all middle-aged, basically. They reach middle age before they realize alcohol's a problem. They're all in on, almost all in on multiple DUIs. If you look down there, 5th DUI, 6th DUI, 7th DUI, 4th DUI, 9th DUI, 9th DUI. Lots of them with high blood alcohols, 308, 282, 216, 175, compared to the standard for intoxication, as you know, of 0.08. And with a large number of these, their total prior record is driving under the influence, nothing else. So they're not people who had an evil mind to go out and commit a crime. They're just addicted to alcohol, and they keep driving no matter what. Or they make bad decisions when they've had alcohol and get behind the wheel. And it's a kind of population that's a very good idea to address the problem, which is alcohol addiction, and cure the problem, and you won't see the people again. As conversely, if you put them in jail, like these ones with a 9th or anything above a 6th DUI is going to go to jail for a year, mandatory. They come out of that, and they're craving alcohol. We see case after case, as Senator French, who's had experience in the criminal courts, will tell you, where on the first day out of jail, they've gotten drunk, committed driving under the influence again. And the jail time doesn't cure it. It's a good to have mandatory jail to push people into treatment, but treatment is really the only answer for this population. And there's I was talking with Janet McCabe over breakfast about how there's this national movement on this type of court. There's a nationwide organization called the National Drug Court Professionals, are the treatment providers, the judges, the prosecutors, the defenders, case coordinators in these kinds of courts, a nationwide movement to build these kind of courts. There's also from the Department of Justice, and also and Partners for Progress and the Center for Therapeutic Courts is principally funded by Department of Justice funds. The idea being to spark plug the development of this new and very effective kind of court. The method is also receiving a tremendous push from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. Jeff Runge, the head of that, is a former, he's a doctor, and he was an emergency room physician. He's seen the carnage on the highways. He knows it's effective to cure people of alcoholism, get that problem out of the way, and save lives on the highway. So there's a big push from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. And in fact, in Alaska, through Don Smith, who's the state highway traffic safety director, the state has already invested $800,000 in these courts to get them up and going. So it's a very effective method. It's a new idea, and needs a lot of attention and thought to get the idea understood, promoted, and nurtured. And certainly the legislature has applied full policy force to this. They've enacted House Bill 172 unanimously to create the therapeutic DUI courts in Bethel and in Anchorage. They've enacted by similar margins the House Bill 4 to create the enabling powers for the misdemeanor wellness type court. Tremendous support from the legislature. We feel like the model is well understood by the Alaska legislature. In the court system, there's full policy force to do this. The Supreme Court has endorsed this. They've constituted a formal committee to facilitate these type of courts. We've had training of all the judges, and many people have been off to specialized training, and they've hired a full-time, the most important point, a full-time administrator
Robin Johnson on my left, whose sole job is to promote this type of court, make sure that people get off for training, that the right systems are in place, that they get all the support they need to make this system run. And so there's full policy force in the court system. So one of the points we partners wanted to raise today, and we had meetings with representatives of the governor's office yesterday about creating full policy force in the administration. And the hope of partners, just as being a spark plug and an idea entity, is to create some statewide entity such as Robin Johnson, some administrator, perhaps in the Department of Law, perhaps in the governor's office, who will give sole attention to the therapeutic courts and apply that full force of the administration to make sure these things happen. And one of the things that jolted us into action on this was that in the felony DUI courts in Anchorage and in Bethel, there's been no new cases admitted for 9 months. And on the reason that the Department of Corrections has refused to act as a case coordinator, they've been scrambling to get a new case coordinator set up, and that's in the process. But it's 9 months and counting, no new cases in either one of those courts. So you've got these wonderful institutions there ready to take people in, but nobody's coming in. And I saw this firsthand as a district court judge, where I sat on bail reviews for people charged with felony DUI. And you look at the record, it's the sixth DUI, it's his second felony DUI, blood alcohol of 0.30, nothing else on the record. And I'd say to him, you should be in the felony therapeutic court. And the lawyer would say, we've already tried, Your Honor, it's closed. The DA says they're not taking any new cases. They give us the reason that the Department of Corrections has pulled out as case coordinator. So it's 9 months and counting to solve that problem. And the central point here is that, and that's point number one in Partners' two-point agenda, is that there's a full force needed from the administration to make this work. It's a new idea. It needs quick response from the administration to make it work. The legislative role, as I understand these things, might be to authorize a position in the appropriate place and provide that it can be funded either through state funds or federal funds. It's not the lack of money, really. It's the lack of the exact right idea. If you get the right idea, there'll be the money. We'll find it somewhere. And so that's the number one point on partners' agenda, is to get a full-time person. Robin Johnson spends full time at this, full time plus. She's working nights and weekends, but she's going to be judged on that one thing. That's her responsibility to make sure these therapeutic courts work. As far as the court system is concerned, we hope to see a similar position in the state administration, so that there's this kind of full policy force. That one of the key players on the table is the district attorney in each of the districts. You've got a built-in expert on your panel here. Hollis French has much experience in the criminal courts. He can tell you, how. And I was a prosecutor myself. That was a lot of years ago. But it's always the immediate need: the rape case you have to try this week, the murder case that's 2 weeks down the line, the 40-person criminal calendar you've got in the afternoon, and there's tremendous demands on everybody's time to cover all those assignments, and there isn't a lot of time for creative work to sit down and think of a new idea, implement a new idea, solve problems that happen between agencies. We see, therefore, it's a need to get somebody in the administration who's got the ear of the governor, who's going to apply full policy force to make the system work. The other point on the agenda, and I know I was supposed to talk about the effectiveness of the courts. I went, right to the bottom line of what we're asking for. I think many of you know about the effectiveness of the therapeutic courts. There's a chart in your handouts here, which is on the numbered pages, number 9. It looks like this, for those of you who have the numbered pages. It's a color chart in the ones back there. And if you look at that, the national average is people that go to jail is that only one-third, or 33%, remain free of repeat crime. In the next three bars are the wellness court, the one I presided over. The 2001 graduates, if you start at the bottom, 75% remain free at 3 years from repeat crime. In the 2002 graduates, 75% remain free of repeat crime. And in 2003, a shorter time period, because this was measured at the end of 2004, is 100% free of crime. So this method is vastly superior to jail, vastly superior to the old way of doing things, and we're hoping that two of the branches of government are at full policy force on this, and we'd like your help to get the third branch similarly involved. And I'm much encouraged that it will happen. It's a matter of getting the problem laid out and getting everybody understanding. The other thing is training, too, to the extent that that prosecutors can go off for training and administrative people can go off for training. They see this in action. Once you see it in action, you're converted to the benefits of it. The other point, too, on the request of partners was to extend the wellness court method to felony DUI eligibility. And there's only two felony DUI courts in the state right now. That's the one in Bethel and in Anchorage, which were created under pilot project implementation. And there's no felony DUI courts anywhere else in the state. The legislature in House Bill 4 a couple of years ago authorized the wellness court model in misdemeanor cases. It's really the same population. If you look at that chart that we started with, the people in on 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th DUIs, it's the same population that we see in the misdemeanor courts as are in the felony courts. It's just a matter of timing. If they group their DUIs closer together, they end up in felony land. And the idea is that it's time to extend the benefits of this type of court to other parts of the state. For example, as Robin will tell you about pending courts and the last pages of your exhibits, there's pending courts in three other jurisdictions, Fairbanks, Juneau, and Ketchikan, and it would make sense to extend the model so that in those jurisdictions where courts are established, they can draw from both populations, from the felony level and the misdemeanor level. And I know your time is very important. I could talk for all day on this, but if there's any questions, I'd
like to respond. Senator Terrio.
One of the graphs in this handout that was in our packet talked about a number of people that the opt-out category includes participants who have violated conditions of release. So in these statistics where you've got the success, is this only a measurement of people that made it all the way through the program?
Right.
So the people that started, there's a number of people that started the program that get dropped out somewhere along the line.
Right. And those were measured too. It's interesting that even those that dropped out did much better. But the real dynamite benefit comes from those that graduated.
Any other questions for Judge Wanamaker?
And I should introduce Robin Johnson, who's the court systems director of therapeutic courts.
Hey, Robin, if you'd be kind enough to put yourself on the record for us this morning, we're eager to hear your testimony as well.
Thank you. Good morning, Chairman and members of the Senate Judiciary Committee. For the record, my name is Robin Johnson. I am the Therapeutic Courts Program Coordinator, and I'm an employee of the Alaska Court System. As Judge Wanamaker made reference, my position responsibilities is to work with the therapeutic courts statewide, those that are in existence and those that are in the planning phase. There's different titles for therapeutic courts. Ms. McCabe mentioned that the first therapeutic court was started in Dade County, Florida in 1989. That was a drug court because the problems in Dade County at that time were drugs. And there's different terms that are used interchangeably. Drug courts is the generic, most widely used term because that's where they started. They're also called problem-solving courts, DUI courts, wellness court, and specialty courts. So they have a range of names, and some of the changes, the different variety reflects the different target populations. But essentially, the components of all of the courts are very similar. If you look at, I'm not sure what page it is, but the heading is the summary of existing therapeutic courts. Yeah, the last, it's the third last page. That what you will see there with the summary of existing courts reflects the variety of courts outside. I have listed them in chronological order. The first one being the Anchorage Coordinated Resources Project. That is the official title. Informally, everyone refers to it as the Mental Health Court. That one was started in 1998 by Judge Rhodes. It was one of the first four nationally that was established. And Judge Rhodes is a trainer at the National Judicial College on that particular model of therapeutic court. The second one that was established in Anchorage was the Wellness Court, pioneered by Judge Jim Wanamaker. He transferred the gavel to Judge Rhodes in June of last year, and you'll see the difference of the target population of those groups. The Wellness Court model has been very successful here. It reflects the fact that in Alaska, unlike the lower 48, the main drug of choice is alcohol, and so most of the therapeutic courts are for alcohol offenders, although not all of them. The Anchorage Wellness Court model really has pioneered. There is a multi-year, multi-agency evaluation being done of the Wellness Court in terms of transferability to other states throughout the lower 48. And so the therapeutic courts, you'll also note that we have a family dependency court and we have a DUI court in existence. So again, it reflects the different needs of the different populations. The funding source for the different therapeutic courts really reflects, it's a patchwork, it reflects how they got started, and as Judge Wanamaker mentioned, that they're really from the ground up. It reflected the concern, interest, and support of different judges. And so the funding comes essentially from four main places. The first is the legislature. Judge Wanamaker referenced House Bill 172. That has been ongoing. And this financial year, the legislature has also funded the Anchorage Mental Health Court as well. The Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority, the trust, is also very, very supportive of therapeutic courts. This year, what they have done is fund the planning for a mental health court in Palmer. And that happened because the legislature picked up the funding for the Anchorage Court. Partners for Progress, with the grants that they have, are very supportive of the wellness courts, fund those, also some statewide expenses, and especially travel and training. It's a limited budget for that, and as Judge Wanamaker mentioned, that's very, very important. The last source, also the Judge Wanamaker referenced, is the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration funds, and that is through Don Smith, with the Alaska Highway Safety Office here. They have made very much a commitment recognizing that DUI, highway safety is very much related to DUIs, and so addressing DUI problems makes the highway safer. In addition to the funding for the courts, the trust has also given funding to support them in other ways. One of the ways, in the last 2 years, the trust provided money for training for the judicial, for the judges. And that is included both 2 years ago on therapeutic courts generally and last year on mental illness. Part of it is sort of to spread the word, to get the information to judges, but also the other purpose of that is to recognize that therapeutic courts are wonderful. I'm obviously committed to them, I believe in them, but it's not feasible to have them in all communities. And so part of it is the concept of using some of the principles in smaller communities, and that's been done throughout the state. If you look at the summary of the therapeutic courts in the planning process, it's the second to last page, you will note that the first court is the Palmer Court, Palmer Coordinated Resources Project. That's funded by the Trust, and that will be a mental health court. And that really builds on the success of the Anchorage model. It works, and it's been duplicated in the Valley. Similarly, there are three wellness courts in the planning phase. Fairbanks, Ketchikan, and Juneau, they will be based on the Anchorage Wellness Court model. We also have today Wendy Hamilton, and Wendy is the project manager for the Anchorage Court.
The Juneau Court.
For the Juneau Court. They're planning, and they're hoping to be operational in March, so she's very busy working on that. I would invite all of you to visit the courts. We could describe the courts, but to really get the true impact, one really needs to come see them. Some people say miracles happen in the courts. And if you look at the folks when they first come into the courts, when they've been in the courts for a period of time and at graduation, it's remarkable transformation. And so they really are effective. People become sober. They get their self-esteem back. They get jobs. They take care of themselves. They reconnect with families. And it's all of these elements that really have the long-term impact that keep people in and sober. In conclusion, I would like to quote from President George Bush. I think he really provides an excellent description of what therapeutic courts are about. Drug courts are an effective and cost-efficient way to help nonviolent drug offenders commit to a rigorous drug treatment program in lieu of prison. By leveraging the coercive power of the criminal justice system, drug courts can alter the behavior of nonviolent, low-level drug offenders through a combination of judicial supervision, case management, mandatory drug testing, and treatment to ensure abstinence from drugs and escalating sanctions.
Thank you. Question, Senator Huggins.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Robin, the Anchorage Veterans Court, is it a subset of one of these courts?
The Veterans Court targets veterans. The therapeutic courts target people with an underlying addiction. You will note, for example, the target populations, for example, the wellness court is for people convicted of DUI and alcohol-related municipal misdemeanor offenses. The Veterans Court, the commonality there is that they are a vet. They have to meet the national definition, receive services. So the similarity is that it is certainly therapeutic, rehabilitative in its goals and outcomes. So in some ways it is, in some ways it isn't.
But it's generally the same, just 10% of the population that happens to be in this case, a designated category.
But same concept.
Absolutely,
same concept. And also there's cross-reference because some of the people who are veterans are eligible for some of the other courts as well. And so there's reference between the therapeutic courts and the veterans court.
So in that respect, would you recommend or have you given any thought that I think Sig Murphy and another judge is doing the veterans court now, that should be mainstreamed into this system or should be separate, or what would your thoughts?
The Veterans Court started in July of last year. The plan is that at 1 year it will be evaluated, like a lot of the pilot projects, 1 year make an evaluation of it, and that at that time then the court system will make a decision on how to proceed.
Thank you.
Other questions, Senator French?
Chairman, thank you. Maybe you can just refresh my memory. One of your requests is to extend the wellness court method to felony DUI cases, but your summary of existing therapeutic courts lists the felony DUI court that was run for some time by Judge Joannides. What became of that court?
What happened to the chair? What happened to with the felony DUI court in Anchorage and also in Bethel. Last year, Department of Corrections came to the court system and said that they had difficulty hiring probation officers. They were not up to full capacity. And as a result of that, they had to address their core responsibilities. As a result, could not continue with the level of commitment that they had with the therapeutic courts. What they had up until that time, designated probation officers who were the case coordinators. They said that they would, of course, continue the commitment to the participants in the court, but could not ongoing. As a result of that, the court system approached the Department of Health and Social Services, the Alcohol Safety Action Program, ASAP, and positions are created in the process of being created in that department. In Bethel, the position was filled in January, and the PO, the ASAP probation officer, started work on the 1st of February. It is up and running in Bethel. And
in Anchorage?
In Anchorage, there's a memorandum of agreement being completed with court system, ASAP office, and Department of Corrections. Deb Wolf, the court system's attorney, here is working on that.
So is it the idea is in the future the ASAP individuals will take the place of POs for coordinating the felony DUI court?
That is correct, and not only for the felony, but also at the misdemeanor level. And so the plan is also for the three wellness courts that are in the planning process. They will all be standardized statewide.
So getting back to your legislative request, what is it? It sounds like you're working out the problem. Well, what do you need us to do?
This is Partners.
Yeah, I might clarify, there's two different entities at the table. Partners is a nonprofit corporation, like a non-governmental organization, and they made the request about extending to
the felony DUI jurisdiction to the wellness courts that are newly created. So it's a slight distinction there. It's not a court system request. They move not as fast as Partners.
I see. Or at least I think I understand. I mean, it sounds like it's being worked out. Ms. McCabe has her hand up.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman. Chair?
You'd come up. Maybe put your chair up there. We can make a little more room.
All right.
We need to have things for the clearly on the record here.
Okay.
Go ahead, Jim.
As Robin explained, the Bethel and Anchorage felony DUI court are under a separate piece of legislation, and they are pilot programs that were established by the legislature. The recommendation that Partners has is for the, I guess you could say, plain vanilla wellness court that Judge Wanamaker and Partners have started, and it now is just limited to misdemeanors. It would be a lot. And the court system is looking at expanding that version, the wellness court version, to Fairbanks, Juneau, and Ketchikan. They're doing a plan and so on. But generally, it would be a lot more efficient. It's very much the same population, the felons and the misdemeanors with 7, 8, 9 DUIs. It would be more efficient if it could include both people in both the felony category and the misdemeanor category. So that's the recommendation.
So you would, if I may, Mr. Chairman, you would essentially put the felony offender and the misdemeanor offender in the same courtroom at the same time in front of the same judge and just have some mechanism that gives probably a district court judge to have authority over superior court cases.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
And Partners has been working with Representative Roberg, and he has legislation just about ready to be introduced.
I mean, it seems like a good idea to me. If I may, it seems like a good idea instead of having, you know, a balkanized court system where you have an offender, you know, over in one little hearing in front of one judge and another hearing one floor below in front of another judge, put them both in front of the same judge doing the same program.
And if I may, Mr.
Go ahead, yeah.
Chair. Then, of course, there in Fairbanks, Juneau, and Ketchikan, there would be no capacity to handle felons at all because we don't have the Hospital 172 version in those three communities. So this would just, for those startup courts, it would be just a good way to start, we think, that you'd have a consolidated approach towards what is really the same population.
Questions? Senator Huggins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You haven't, or maybe someone will mention it, naltrexone?
Oh. Good question.
And I see your slide on that. The question is that only for alcohol or for alcohol and drugs?
It was designed originally for people addicted to opiates.
Okay.
And it's a wonderful pharmaceutical to get off of opiate addiction. And the reason it works, it blocks the opiate receptors in the brain. So there's no benefit, no buzz from taking opiates if you're on naltrexone. And they discovered by accident, while people were being treated for opiate addiction, they reported, "I no longer have a desire to drink alcohol."
Right.
And then they studied that. There's 13 major studies and 20 more minor studies that confirm the benefits of this in treating alcoholism. And it's the same mechanism. It blocks the pleasure receptors system, the dopamine system of the brain, from feeling a buzz when you drink alcohol. You would still get drunk, you would still fall down, but you don't get any pleasure out of it. So people, lots and lots of the population we deal with, they had enormous cravings for the alcohol, and this just takes away the cravings so that they have a window of opportunity when they're not experiencing that gut craving for the alcohol, and they can concentrate on their treatment. Been a miracle drug in providing that window of opportunity. It doesn't cure it all by itself.
Work for alcohol and opiates? Is that what you
Yes,
said?
And other things too. They've found it works for, the mechanism of children who are cutters, cut themselves to experience an opiate release, and it works on them. It works on, there's a study on, what's that condition where young women starve themselves to death?
Anorexia.
Yeah, is activating opiates. Is they find the underlying reason they do that. They take naltrexone. In fact, I had one of the first cases in the wellness court was a very thin young woman. I remember thinking in my head, she's so thin, I couldn't put her in jail. I couldn't keep her there. She's so thin, she could go between the bars. And when she graduated, her mother said, not only has she gotten cured of alcohol, her anorexia problem has also disappeared. Yeah.
If I might, one other question in the business of what you envision scenario-wise, because I see the term felony here. I was talking to a couple this weekend that had lost a very young member of their family from somebody that was under the influence at the time of drugs. Does this program, if you're the victim of that, and you were sitting out here today, if it was me, I'd be highly emotional because you're saying, kill my family member and you're going to give them this alternative. Are you visualizing that for the scenario I just said?
My third case in the wellness court, the defendant had hit another car, caused some neck injuries to the occupant of the car. He came into court, the victim came to court, he was hopping mad. He said, "Your Honor, I don't want you to coddle this criminal. I want him put away in jail. Give him the maximum term." And I said, "Sir, come and watch the wellness court. Watch what happens." And he came to lots of, he came about six times and watched wellness court when this defendant was on the calendar. And at the graduation, he said, "Your Honor, I've seen this method at work. I've seen that it's turned this man's life around. And I'm just thrilled at the benefit that this is. I've even invited the defendant to go with me and join my church." So he'd completely turned around. The victim, who was angry at the beginning, saw the benefit of in this one instance, that guy got sober, remained sober. He's not been a problem since.
I'm sorry, Greg, please.
And the victims are always involved, they get to say in the start of the case.
Right. Yeah. And of course, the court is for, we're talking about low-level felons that are not accused of manslaughter or are not violent criminals. It's a limited, a real precise limited segment of the population, but they are terrifically dangerous people, as Matt has recognized. If they are going to get out of jail and immediately go drink and drive, it's very important to address them. But we don't take manslaughter cases for sure, do we?
No, that's, yeah.
Okay, good. That makes me feel more comfortable.
Yeah.
Senator French?
Thank you. I think Senator Huggins has touched on a good point, though, and it may just need a little more articulation so that both the committee and the public knows how the program works. And maybe you can just describe what protects the public from an offender who either goes astray during treatment, opts out of the program. You know, what sort of hammer do you have to keep folks in line, and what sort of bail conditions are in place while a person is going undergoing this alternative treatment?
Thank you, through the chair. You know, initially, when one of the great advantages of the therapy program is you get them right at the beginning, right after they committed the crime, and they're thinking about the problem.
You know, as we all know, we've all seen people that are alcoholic addicted. They don't want to deal with it. They absolutely deny they have a problem. But the interdiction comes early. When they're at arraignment, they get into this program, they get into treatment at the beginning, and that's a protection to the public there. Typically, they'll start on house arrest program electronic monitoring, which was a legislative innovation, a wonderful one that the legislature passed, where they can be out at their jobs and with their families, but they're closely monitored. They have an ankle bracelet that reports their location. They have to be at home during the house arrest hours. If the hours they stay at work, they can drive by and check if the person is at work. They say if they're at a doctor appointment, the DOC will check if they're at the doctor appointment. You know, all of those people also have to do the Sobriator, which is a space age technology. It operates over the phone, and at random times of the day, they'll call the defendant and say, you have to be tested now for alcohol. And he takes this, it's about the size of a football, this device that's plugged into the phone, and he says certain key words that are programmed in there, and it recognizes his voice, and then he has to breathe. And it gives a breath alcohol reading, out to the control center in the Midwest, up to four digits, the alcohol reading, because I've seen it comes, if it's a hot sample, they call the Anchorage police or the state police, and they go out and pick them up. So the judge knows that those people are staying sober. The public is absolutely being protected. They know they're staying sober. There's another technology called SCRAM that goes on the ankle and reads any ingestion of alcohol 24/7. And we tested that on police officers from Anchorage and Bethel. No, Kotzebue, Anchorage and Kotzebue. And it just graphs the ingestion of alcohol. It reads the sweat. If the first drink causes a rise, the second drink, you can just, it graphs exactly over time with any consumption of alcohol. Then they pass by a modem that reports that to the control center. If it's a hot sample, then they call in. So the technologies, the technology of the pharmaceuticals changes things. The technology of the ability to monitor, so you know that the public is being protected, changes things.
And just you ask if they dropped out. They go back into regular sentencing. It's the same process. But the record we have for people who have dropped out is that they are less likely to recidivate than people that have not been in the program. But they go into regular sentencing, the same system.
Senator French?
Sir, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Final question. What becomes of that criminal sentence? Maybe you can describe for the panel what migrant credit is and how that works in conjunction with house arrest and criminal sentence.
In the typical case in the
wellness court, the person will start on very restricted bail and the house arrest program electronic monitoring. And the legislature had passed them about, years go by, but I think about 1999, and it is now possible to serve jail by house arrest program electronic monitoring. This is a case where we worked out a deal with the Department of Corrections that they would do bail on this system. So in Anchorage, it's possible to put a defendant out on bail.
Once it comes sentencing time, he's given credit as jail, because it was exactly the same thing as serving jail. He's given credit for that. Also, there's a case that Senator French mentioned called the Nygren case, a Supreme Court case that says time where the judge has ordered in a person into a confinement setting, such as treatment, that can be also credited towards jail. So like on the wellness court model, there's the judge has the power on graduation to forgive 75% of jail. There's a remaining 25%, and typically they've already discharged that by the house arrest program, electronic monitoring, or by Nygren credit for residential treatment. So it causes a policy shift in taking the creative approach. What is the problem? It's alcohol addiction. Addressing the problem right at the beginning. All of that encourages people to get into treatment, solve the underlying problem, instead of just passing it alone.
Thank you very much. In fact, Dr. Runge, the administrator of the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, is a friend of mine. I met with him last Friday. He may be coming up here to testify on another issue later in this session. And we'll certainly talk to him about it.
We'd be thrilled to have him speak in Anchorage if you could have possibly arranged it.
We'll see what we can do. Yeah. And we'll be looking forward to Representative Roper's bill for consideration as it goes through the process.
We really appreciate the opportunity and your good questions. So
thank you very much.
Thank you.
Take a 5-minute recess. We'll come back to order in the Judiciary Committee. Turn to our second bill of the matter of the morning, Senate Bill 65.
CS.
We do have a CS that should be in your packet or that we're handing out. That I would like to consider as our working document. Get a motion to adopt this CS as our working document.
That's true.
Secretary.
/ F version 21.5.
Objection? Hearing none, I'll explain what it is. Here what we've done is we've taken a look at this matter. I have an affinity against creating special groups of people. If the intent of the bill is to provide for safer school grounds and activities, then we should address the crime that's committed on school ground or school activity, regardless of who the crime has been committed against. So you'll notice that we have basically, if the offense is a violation of AS 1141, and the offense occurred on school grounds, on a school bus, at a school-sponsored event, or in the administrative offices of the school district, then this would come into play. Not if it occurred on those grounds or on those locations to certain selected people. So I've eliminated the list and said that school grounds and the activity are what I want to address. Is there a discussion on that matter? Senator Huggins.
Mr. Chair, I agree with the essence of the change. I guess my question is, if we school grounds become a sacred ground now 24 hours a day, is that the intent? I'm not saying that's good or bad. I'm just trying to look at scenarios, and maybe someone's questioned about that before.
It the way it's written, that's true. So I guess if somebody committed a robbery on a school ground at night, they might have a problem. But the intent here is to, the intent is more or less to protect the grounds and the buses and the activities when people that are somehow or another connected to the school are there. The fallout would be it would be protected 24 hours a day.
If I might, that doesn't make me nervous in the respect that the first cousin to this, which I'm pretty familiar with, is military compounds. Mm-hmm. You go into a military compound, I don't care what you're up to, you know, there's a little sign posted there, and whether they stop and search your vehicle or you commit a crime, number one, it's a federal crime, and people, the word's out. You don't speed on military installations. You don't do bad things because they will put you away in a heartbeat. That's a good thing.
I guess that's what I'm trying to come across here as well. Senator French, do you have comments?
Just, I think, just to make the record clear, that AS 1141 are basically assault grants. Is that
right?
I think it's a good. I think it's a good approach, Mr. Chairman. I think everyone should be entitled to some protection at school, whether you're a child or whether you're an adult, whether you're a delivery man or a volunteer. And again, this is an aggravator. It's something the judge can take into account. It's something the jury is going to have to find beyond a reasonable doubt before any penalty can be imposed. And it's something that the judge can either impose additional time for or not, depending on his view of the totality of the circumstances.
Senator Terrell.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to point out that the definition here of school grounds, building, structure, athletic, playing field, playground, parking area, or land contained within the real property boundary line of a public or private preschool, elementary school, or secondary school. So it does come in the private schools. The question, though, you've got here, or in the administrative offices of the school district. I mean, that's just an office building.
Yes.
I'm wondering why you chose to put that in. The borough assembly considers funding measures for schools, so they take up school at discussion, but that's at the borough assembly. That's not at the district administrative offices. And I'm just wondering if we want this, you know, protection of the schools where kids are, that's not the administrative office building.
Well, I think you could. That was a request that came from the school districts, of course, that there also be some extended protection to the administrative offices. You can expand it if you'd like to.
I'd like to reduce it.
Yeah. I know you would, but I'm offering you the opportunity to expand it as well.
No.
I understand. That was a request that was made, if I'm not mistaken, by the school district, the Anchorage School District, was that they do have separate administrative buildings, and that some of those functions could likewise be included in the definition of school property. So, Senator French?
And Mr. Chairman, I'm familiar with the administrative school building in Anchorage because I live there and I go out there from time to time. It's located on the east side of town. I don't know about Kenai, Wasilla, Fairbanks, Nome. I don't know whether those are all. My guess is that they're typically in the major school in the area, but Fairbanks has a number of schools, and so in other places, I just don't know how they handle it.
They have a district building.
Separate from a campus. North Pole?
It's part of the Fairbanks.
Same.
Fairbanks School District.
Separate in Wasilla.
So, you know, I'm more than willing to listen to any amendments that anyone has. I don't have a particular problem trying to address that as part of what I would think would be school property, but I'm willing to listen.
What's your intent for bill today?
I'd like to move it out if we can. If there's something terribly controversial, we'd be more than happy to consider it. Carry it over another day. That doesn't bother me. Senator Terrio.
Mr. Chairman, I move Amendment 1 on lines, page 1, lines 8 and 9, to remove or in the administrative offices of the school district.
Okay. Is there objection to the amendment?
I object for the purposes of discussion.
Go ahead, Senator French.
I guess I would like to hear from Fairbanks, from Palmer and Wasilla, and from folks who have administrative buildings off of school campuses to find out if it's an issue or not an issue. That, you know, before we strike the language, I guess I'd like to have something to go on. I don't know if there's ever been an assault in the administrative building in Anchorage. It may be that there's mostly threats. My guess is it's mostly threats. People are angry. They show up angry. People are nervous about the anger, and it diffuses. But I don't know, maybe someone's walked in there with a gun before. I just don't know, or in somewhere else.
Senator Terrio?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm sure angry people show up at the borough clerk's office when it comes tax time, too. are they any less deserving? Or we've got a centralized kitchen for the district in Fairbanks where they prepare the meals. It's school related, but it's not a school. And it just seems to me that we should draw the line at those things that the public clearly understands. That's a school. That's a school property. It's the football field. Everybody understands that.
Central kitchen's on Allison Air Force Base, so it'd be a federal one. Well, I'm glad to carry this over and allow someone from the school district to testify. I don't see that anybody has signed up today. We did have the bill noticed under previous bills, but Senator French?
Mr. Chairman, I wasn't given the CS until just now. Maybe it wasn't. Maybe the rest of the world hasn't seen it.
No, we don't have any problem doing that. And so what we'll do is let's hold the amendment now without a vote, and we'll reopen the matter for public testimony. What do we have on the first part of the week next week?
We can look at it Tuesday.
Tuesday? We'll bring it back up again Tuesday. And the Department of Law has comments that they'd like to put in on Tuesday, as we'll also solicit the Senator French, talk to the Anchorage School District, and see if they'd like to solicit some, give us some comments on that. We'll also ask other members if they would like to have their school administrators as well give us some kind of comment and rationale, and then we can take an action on this bill next Tuesday. Senator Terrio?
Mr. Chairman, I anticipate, though, if you call anybody in the school administration building, say,
they're
hey,
gonna
want in, I can tell you what the answer is going to be. I guess the policy call is where you draw that line.
Right. And I'd like to know if there have been assaults.
Bring them in, but not bring in other people.
Anybody. Who would we want to have? Anybody. I'm more than happy to listen to it, because I think the question is there something there? We know that the assaults do occur on school property. We know they do at school events. Is there a problem in administrative buildings? I don't know. It's a good question. It's well worth looking at.
And just from my understanding, that's the only change from the bill we saw before?
That's it. Am I correct, Mr.
Yeah. Cole? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I have to ask the erstwhile staff, because
I understand.
I'm getting older. But with that, we will hold this bill. Senator Huggins.
Mr. Chair, just one clarification. As I note here, it says involving minors. The target is minors. Is that correct? An accolade to certain weapons offense involving minors. I'm just reading the words.
Well, that refers back to the next section 2, where misconduct involving weapons in a first or second degree violation will now become an adult crime. If I'm not mistaken, is that correct, Annie?
Yeah, I'm reading as the title, and it says minors.
Yeah, the title basically goes back to this section that you see on lines 25 and 26 of page 2. Here we're adding, in addition to this on school district, we're saying that if a minor over the age of 16 commits a crime with an adult with a gun, the first or second degree in violation of those statutes, then basically they will be tried as an adult. So that's what that heading is, and that's the part of it, that semicolon refers to that section. That has nothing to do with assault by minors on the school district.
And just one other comment, and I, because Senator French talked about Wasilla, I'm not advocating for this, but in the case of hockey and some other events now, we have a multi-sports complex where essentially comes the gym off the school sites. And I'm not advocating that the multi-sports complex be under this, but I'm just looking at scenarios where lots of kids gather, and it turns out to be the same thing, school away from school. But my point is that we can always extend this to lots of places.
This would be at a school-sponsored event. If it was a school-sponsored hockey game between two of our local high schools, that would be
so it would be applicable.
Yes, yeah. It would apply here.
Got it.
Correct. Well, it's a dance or a hockey party. Sometimes you can't.
Yeah. Tell them apart.
Yeah, right. So, but The so I think also, Senator Terry, if I'm correct, your proposed amendment would also alter the title. Or the administrative offices of school districts. So we will hold this bill over until next Tuesday. And with that, if there's nothing else to come before the committee this morning, the committee is adjourned.